not going to carry you any farther.
That's it.
And then we can make a motion. We'll go by consensus.
So she made a motion and.
Yeah, I second.
We can't make motion.
Can't make motion.
We're just kind of by consensus saying to. So then you're going to call me to order that, and we'll call that.
Did Devin start the recording?
Yeah.
Can't take action.
Yeah, no, no, have we?
Well, it's recorded.
Ready to go. Oh, that's right, I'm sorry. So go ahead, just call me to order.
Okay. Got to call the work session meeting to order. Did I get a roll call?
Councilmember Wes Hassner?
Here.
Councilmember Paul? Councilmember Lee?
Here.
Mayor Jacobson? Councilmember Russell?
Present.
Councilmember Morrison?
Present.
And Chair Parks?
Here.
Chair Parks, you have the floor.
Okay, as previously noticed, this meeting of the charter, oh, what is this one about?
Was that the wrong one?
The city council.
City council.
Okay. City council meeting is being conducted by telephone or electronic means pursuant to Minnesota statute section 13B.021. I'm physically present in the room along with Councilmember Morrison, Councilmember Lee, Councilmember Wes Hassner, and Councilmember, what's your name?
Russell.
Russell. All other council members are participating by telephone or other electronic means. All council members can hear one another and can hear all discussion and testimony. Members of the public can monitor the meeting by calling into the conference call number. Dial 1-218-302-5973. Meeting ID 506-993-532. After you join, press pound when you are asked to enter our participating ID. Okay. So I'm just going to go right into approval of the agenda, removing C2.
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda and removing C2.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. C2. You got 3 minutes.
All right. Or C1.
C1. No, we're fully, yeah, C1.
Hold C2.
Well, good evening. Jason Newby, Inspectors and Environmental Health Manager. We're here tonight to bring to you some code amendments that for you to consider and to have discussion about. Three in particular. One, first being the food, pools, and lodging code amendments. This is a mandatory step that we have to do. It's in relation to a recent evaluation from the Department of Health that identified some updates that we need to do as far as our references go. The second ordinance to discuss tonight is the waste container storage code. This is a common code violation at most properties in the city and continues to consume staff time for sweep requests in large quantities in certain areas of the community. And then finally, No More May, which the city council had expressed interest in participating in a recent work session. As stated, the sections on food, pools, and lodging require some minor changes. There's been some recent changes in the numbering, statutes, and rules. These impact some of these code sections that grant us the authority to license and inspect the facilities. And in order to align with our delegation agreement, we need to make sure that we align with those statutory references as well. So sort of a housekeeping exercise, but wanted to bring this, we're bringing other code changes, wanted to bring this to your attention as well. That this would be coming in sometime in July. The waste container storage code, like I said, this is one of the most common violation types in the city. We consider this a temporary violation in that it can often change frequently and it sometimes can be difficult to maintain compliance. Every property in the city has a waste container or multiples, and so those locations on where they're stored can change often, given some different scenarios here that provided why. Seasonal changes, there might be summer months where for the duration of the winter, the cans were stored in the garage and now they've migrated outside because of the temperature and residents no longer want to store them inside. In the winter, that changes it as well, where they may have been storing their cans behind the house, which is an approved location, and now there isn't a plowed path to the back, and the cars are in the garage, and there's not room. So there's seasonal impacts. Odors, as mentioned, the garage is full, sometimes full of cars, full of items, sometimes the garage isn't an option. No screening outside, simply forgot to bring it in due to illness, vacations, maybe going up to the cabin and leave it out and come back a few days later. We get complaints about that too, so those cans are outside. And in work schedule, residents may work third shift or need to keep their cans out because it's just more convenient for them. And there's been instances where we've had staff go buy a property and send them a notice, and they were simply just cleaning up the garage and the can was out for a day or two, and you can imagine how those conversations went with staff. What's interesting is that a few residents submit most of our complaints. I would say less than 10 residents submit about 90% of our trash can complaints. That creates some equity concerns for us as a staff. Certain neighborhoods are getting more enforcement than others. It's taking staff away from other areas, and we're focusing a lot of time in small pockets. What happens is when we get a trash can complaint, and this is just storage, this isn't a trash can that's overflowing or causing any kind of nuisance, it's just where it's stored. Our staff oftentimes will try to sweep the entire block just to apply that equity lens to that block so that we're not narrowing our focus on just those that are being complained about, and if there's common violations, we're including those in our sweeps as well. So that in turn adds to the caseloads and the resources. We also have residents with physical limitations. Our aging population need to keep their cans out. They have agreements with the waste haulers that allow them to go pick them up, bring them down, empty them, and bring them back to the garage, outside the garage. And we oftentimes are working with those residents as well. And then to end, some properties present some challenges with meeting the code. We have single car garages where there isn't an option for 3 to 4 containers inside the garage if there's a vehicle in there. Screening options can be a problem for some residents. The shape of their lot can create challenges. Some HOAs have fencing limitations. You can't use wood, and you can't use plastic fencing. The garage is only the only option, so the staff is working on those types of challenges as well. And the cost for installation is a common concern. Here's just some examples of the things and strategies we've tried to create. We've designed door hangers. We have actually a door hanger dedicated to trash cans. You can see on your right there. QR code links residents right to our Build a Code video and the chapter on waste container storage. We have flyers that are in plain language that incorporate photos that are simplified the code for a variety of code violations that you see up there, one for waste containers and some of the other violation types that we're commonly out visiting properties for. And then the general, sorry we missed you. The door hangers are good because it aligns with our strategy to engage and meet with our residents, opposed to just strictly doing the enforcement and, you know, sending a notice and not having that face-to-face. So the door hanger really isn't the intent to hang it on the door, but it's really to meet with that resident. And in the event that they're not there, the business card for the inspector is available, and those connections are made after our visit and maybe a future visit. So the current code for waste containers, you'll see here some examples. These are outdoor storage, screening store examples. But you know, if you don't put it in the garage, this is what we're typically seeing. If it's not in the backyard, all waste containers must be stored out of public view from the street and neighboring front yards. So that means backyard storage is still allowed for your neighbors to see your containers. So this is pure. This is purely an aesthetic curb appeal type of ordinance. And then there's an allowance for the cans to be placed out at 3 p.m. prior to pickup if they're returned on the same day of pickup to their storage location. Staff has provided some options to consider and discuss. Option one is no change to the current ordinance and keep it as is. Storage inside the garage, screening, or behind the house. Example here is a good, the side picture on the left side is a violation of the current ordinance. Picture on the right is in compliance. So it's simply screening those containers from view.
You're chasing?
Yes.
So if there's no fence and the cans are still at the back of the house, even though it's like visible from like the street, like that's still okay, that's not cool.
That's where it can get a little subjective for staff because we become sort of, you know, managing what's screening, what's not, and what's visible. So, you know, it says neighboring front yards. So if we're standing in the neighbor's front yard and can see it, it's still a violation. Yeah, technically.
Can you talk a little bit about the history of the ordinance? I mean, this has been in place the whole 20-some years of the park, so I don't know what the impetus was of it because I know other cities don't have it.
So option two here kind of brings it to light some of your questions. Since I've been here, it's been part of the ordinance. I've seen it amended a couple times. More recently, in 2010, when the vegetation allowance sort of went away and was stricken from the code, we used to allow bushes and other landscaping materials to be used, and now it's just strictly fencing and materials if you're going to keep it outside, which added to the cost and some of the setback issues. And so looking back, I don't know initially why it was adopted. My guess is that it was more to control some of the older containers, the aluminum containers with missing lids that would often tip over and blow trash around. Now cans are pretty much consistently look the same or are designed the same with tight fitting lids. So, you know, outside of the color of the can, they're all pretty much the same. Option two, like I said, is to bring back language to allow vegetation. This would give staff a little bit more flexibility, maybe the residents more flexibility as well. Option three, and what we're commonly seeing now in other communities, is allowing the trash containers or the waste containers to be stored neatly beside the garage, behind the front plane of the house, in the rear, inside the garage. So here's a couple examples of what this option would allow and would make enforcement a little bit easier for staff. I like this infographic. This is from a community out of Illinois. It's consistent with what option three is proposing inside the garage, beside the house, behind, and referencing areas that are not. Not necessarily sure about the lath of the one with the yellow circle. We might want to adjust that because we get complaints about cans in the street at pickup days. So we want to make sure that those are in the boulevard. But really like this infographic, and it's something that we would definitely create and design with our communications team. So what are other cities doing? Recently, some cities have amended this ordinance. Maple Grove, as early as this year, currently allows no more than two containers stored behind the front plane of the house, beside the garage, and they actually require a paved finish surface for these to be stored on. That is a little unique to what I've seen. Edina, 2 years ago, has to be within 5 feet of the garage or side yard. Burnsville, 3 years ago, side or rear yard allowances. And then Brooklyn Center, for quite some time, has allowed behind the front plane of the house or inside the garage. Wanted to mention just this ordinance is strictly due to storage. Any overflowing cans, nuisances, anything interfering with neighboring properties, cans that occur and placed out in the street for too long would still remain a violation. We would still follow up with those. And the final ordinance is...
Can I ask you one question before we move on to that? So what's going to... If we went to the two containers, I think most people have only two containers. Anybody with three or four that I know of, but possibly we'll have three or four because of the organics stuff. I don't know what those cans are going to look like, if that's going to be potentially substantially different than than the current. I don't need it that big. Organics can, I hope.
Yep.
Or maybe they hope we do. I don't know. But
yeah, to my knowledge, there is an additional can that would require for organics. Would allow you to maybe minimize your waste container and may have a larger organics. We also have yard waste. Mm-hmm. That brings in another can, so it's recycling garbage, organics, and yard waste.
Okay.
I guess nobody in my area has the yard waste, so it's another one. And then finally, No Mow May. No Mow May is a conservation initiative that encourages residents to stop mowing for the month of May to create a habitat and provide more resources for pollinators. We did receive quite a few inquiries this year from residents asking if we're participating. Some cities that I think created some of this this buzz was Edina had a very public event and strategy. Vannis Heights, New Brighton, West St. Paul, Columbia Heights, and Rochester. Options for No Mow May. There's a couple options after speaking with the city attorney. There's a code amendment that we know one city did where they temporarily suspended the long grass and weed ordinance for the height requirement in the month of May. We also could do, based on recommendation from the city attorney, is just declaring the resolution No Mow May. And within that resolution, there could be guidelines for participation. The Edina model, which provided the link here, provided a voluntary registration that wasn't mandatory, but it provided a nice outlet for the residents to go on to a form on their website and just inform the city that, hey, I'm participating, I'm going to be doing this, I'm well aware of the benefits, I know, you know, I'm going to have to, you know, mow the grass in June, and then also place a sign in their yard informing their neighbors and the general public that they are participating. And in Edina, they supplied a limited number of signs, and then when they ran out, they were available for free. Part of our communications engagement strategies would be to develop sort of a menu of options here, assets as far as web pages, social media content, informational videos, the print materials that you saw, those infographics, and then email blasts. For the waste container code, we're thinking of stakeholder engagement. Not sure what that looks like just yet, but we'll plan that out as well with information and a feedback campaign as well. No Mow May, there would be a similar information and feedback campaign coupled with staff reaching out to those participating cities to get a bit additional feedback on how it went for them. Are they intending to do it again next year? Early indications from Edina, it was hugely successful, and they're already looking into additional things like soil content and taking it a step further. So they're really analyzing that and participating. And they have over 1,100 residents participating. Proposed timeline for these strategies, the Food, Pools, and Lodging Code needs to happen, and we'll be bringing that forward in July for first and second reading. The Waste Container Code would be an awareness campaign and stakeholder engagement in July with a public hearing and first reading in August and a second reading in September. And then the No Mow May would have a similar informational campaign in August with a public hearing and first reading in second reading in September. So next steps, preliminary feedback tonight on the proposed code amendments. What questions or information would you like related to these codes? And is there feedback on our process for engaging the community?
Councilmember Morrison.
My first thought upon this information and all the information that we have been receiving since I've been on council is I support option 3, giving the residents an opportunity to, if they forget it, it's out in front of their house or it's on the side of their house, and or they can erect a fence. Also, I'm supporting of the language of the vegetation being restored, because that still is a barrier to shield the garbage cans. If somebody chooses to do that, it's still an attempt to do that, in my opinion. I know that in the garage, over a period of time, especially in the summer, the aroma from garbage cans is not a good thing, and I hate going to my garage smelling what's left in those containers from months and months and months and months. The I support option three, but I also want to include the language back with the vegetation being used as a barrier. The option for I know it's not a real option for the lodging and a pool and those type of things, because that's something that we need to do. But I think again, option. If you went back to the schematic, did you say you pulled up from Illinois? Yeah. Yeah, those check marks, I think all of them okay. You got an option to put them in their garage. You got an option to put them outside the house, forgot or not forgot, or on the side of the house or even behind the house. I support that option. And I also support, because my wife even brought it to my attention. I was out talking to some homeowners, and a lot of homeowners had read somewhere about No More May, hence the reason why they didn't cut their grass, because they thought we was already in No More May. And my wife even said she heard something about that, but I heard it, but I didn't know if we participated, but then I just thought it was a statewide thing or something like that, because people started talking about it, so nobody was mowing their grass in May. So I would support that option as well. For the benefits that it offers or contains. So No More May, option number three, with the inclusion of the vegetation being restored in the language, because it serves as a barrier for garbage cans. And I think that would helpfully eliminate some of this 90% of these 10% of people who writing in about these trash cans and garbage cans. And but again, that's my thoughts. Option three, with the inclusion of restoring the vegetation, No More May being the adopted process that we use from here on out going for May. And because even month of May is early, get your tools tuned up and cleaned up and take them, get them overhauled. And some of the places that does that is backed up, and a lot of reasons that I hear from seeing through Home Depot. So then I do know that that's a part of springtime where people start redoing their yards, getting ready for the summer too. So but those are my thoughts.
Somebody calling in?
I think it's Mary.
Oh. She's out.
No, she was calling
you
on her way back.
Oh, okay. Councilmember Lee.
Thank you, Chair. So my question on the trash bins is, you know, how much of this do we think will help lower the complaints? Because, you know, we're probably going to expect complaints anyway from a certain amount of people, whether it's this or maybe other things that they might move on to. So like if we go with option three and at least move everything behind the front plane, I mean, will that help to ease some of those complaints specifically?
Councilmember Lee, yeah, definitely will limit the number of, so at times we receive lists of 30 addresses with just trash cans, which takes us to pockets of the community, and then we're adding additional violations at these properties, which, you know, it provides a lot of power to the complainant, right? Yeah. And dictates kind of where we're at. So it limits us from expanding out, and because it's so common, it is easy for us to get stuck in those areas. And so to answer your question, yes, it's been for many years something staff has been looking for, but it also would free us up to do some of the bigger items, you know, the junk vehicles, the parking on the grass, the maintenance, right. The property maintenance, you know, really focus on the things that we know the residents impact livability.
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds good. And that also leads me to my other question about the No More May. So I was actually in Edina this past weekend for the art fair, and there were like a lot of homes that I saw with that, you know. So grass was really high still, even now, you know, into June. So I don't know if they have, like, you know, rules about, oh, like, at least make sure you're not overgrowing into your neighbor's yard, or like, how do we, are we going to register? It sounds like we're going to register them, maybe give them a sign, so maybe at least like before May ends, we can send them an email saying, hey, you know, it's almost end of May, you know, please like make plans to mow your yard, and, you know, so things like that. I mean, is that going to be in the process?
Yeah, I like that. I really like that idea, especially if we do capture those that are participating. It'd be easy for us to connect with them. I do recall Edina's is June 10th, so within the resolution, within the ordinance, so any day now, those yards by ordinance, or that would sunset, and they would have to mow by in the next couple of days. Here.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
So then lastly, I think, just to the point of like complaints in particular, you know, I do want to uphold a certain like sensibility, right, in terms of aesthetics of Brooklyn Park. And I've been on some of those email chains about the complainers talking about this sensibility that seems to have been lost by some, or maybe not have learned or acquired in some way or whatever the situation may be. And so how do we, you know, I know that the mayor has offered some kind of a meeting to kind of address that, but is there anything within the code enforcement that we can do to address that, addresses that, you know, like that sensibility? Or, I mean, I don't know if that's the right word, but
definitely, we definitely make every attempt to reach all of the residents that we're working with, both the people complaining, but also those that are getting complained about. So it's really engaging both parties on the same level. Some of these individuals I've met personally in their driveway, walked to their neighborhood, and had conversations with others that are no longer feel that the trash cans are that high of a priority, where we've had those conversations and talked about what these alternatives look like. And so that's had a lasting effect on some of those individuals, and we're getting less and less complaints from those. But it is the waste containers are just the driver, you know, which then, you know, creates sort of this domino effect in areas. And definitely, we have long grass. We have vehicles that are being, you know, worked on. You know, we have junk vehicles, property maintenance. But that's citywide.
Yeah.
And it's really, how do we deploy our resources the best we can with, you know, 4 inspectors citywide and 3 interns each year. And we're down some staff right now with some vacancies. And it's been hard hiring interns.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, maximizing our resources. And this one definitely pulls us.
I would add that one of the things that we talked with Rissica and the mayor and others about is like making sure that we're on top of a spring campaign around maintenance, because it's always the case in May, you know, the snow melts, there's trash everywhere, like, yeah, and making sure that those messages are being deployed annually. So we will work on that as well, towards the point about like kind of inspiring pride in the neighborhood.
Right. No, great. And I mean, obviously, I trust that. Like the gray area, right? The judgment of the code enforcers. Sorry to take up too much time, but one last question in terms of the residents' questions about expanding code enforcement to be able to meet some of the demands that, you know, I mean, obviously not for the complainers' benefits, but you know, just for our own benefit, you know. So. I mean, I know that's a larger budget conversation, but what would be ideal?
Right. So right now, in the last, since 2014, we've shifted to heavy on the outreach and engagement, and we have data to support some lasting long-term compliance. We're giving people the information. We're empowering the neighborhoods to get to know each other, to comply on their own versus historically we were mowing a lot of grass, we were issuing a lot of citations, we had a lot of appeal hearings. So that process works, but it takes a lot of time on the front end. And so if you do that work on the front end, it pays dividends in the back. And, you know, does that mean more staff? Does that mean, you know, adjusting some of the ordinances? I think it's a combination of everything.
Right.
But the process that we've been recognized nationally for our process, and so
we're trying not to increase code enforcement. We're trying to put more resources into the front end of engagement. And
yeah, changing the narrative around code enforcement, which has historically been this, you know, punitive, no tolerance approach, right? And really being a resource and not a hurdle. And that's what our inspectors have embraced in the last 6 years. The community expectations is that, okay, let's get to know each other. Let's help each other. So that's what we're driving with our messaging, with our meet and greets.
You know, if you think about our staffing, we have enough inspectors to get through a proactive sweep in a 5-year period. Right. And we're actually probably not on track to meet that. So that's the goal, is to get through the whole city in a proactive sweep in 5 years. So if you guys want us to get through the community at a faster pace, you need more people to do it.
That
gives you a
sense.
Yeah.
That district a year.
Okay. So if I could just add in on this topic here. So if we just adopted the language that says no mow May, period, that gives a resident still the option to mow if they need to,
sure,
or want to or desire, but the city don't have to. You relieve the code enforcement for the whole entire month of May, but you don't have to worry about it. Nobody should, in my opinion, no one should have to go get a sign to say I'm a no mow May person because it's already adopted in the city. So it's less cumbersome about calling in, registering your property that you no mow May because the city done adopted that. But if you decide to cut your grass, you decide to cut your grass in the month of May. It's not a burden on code enforcement. It's not a burden on that resident to have to do any further steps to let you know that they're not going to cut their grass or they're participating in it. And there's no language that somebody can call in to say that there's a problem because we already adopted no more May. So for May, the residents have that freedom not to choose to or to choose to support it. But I don't think we need no excessive language. That's what complicates these things because we got to respond to everything that we incorporate into this language. Because somebody's going to pick something out of it. But if we just declare us a no more May city, then that eliminates anybody have to do anything else. So we have to print up some signs to get somebody to put it in line, their lawn to display that they're no more May home or resident and those type of things. It won't occupy code enforcement time or the need for more code enforcement to cover such a tedious issue as far as I'm concerned.
There's some education that needs to happen, though.
Yeah, I mean, get the information out.
Yeah. Oh, let's clarify if all the people that already that don't understand what no mow May is,
exactly,
and are going to call and complain because they don't understand, even if we like pass some, this is my personal opinion, is that even if we pass something like that, which is, I get what you're saying, I think there still needs to be education of the community to say, we are going to do this so that they're not getting 8,000 calls when the grass gets tall in the middle of May or for the end of May. But then there's also that expectation that come June, by June 10th or whatever, 6th or whatever day we pick, that your lawn is mowed. And so that there isn't yet another group of people to sort of get picked at, you know, so.
So we have now until next May to make that happen.
Yeah.
It can be pushed in a park pages every month that no more May 2023 is coming, or however you want to say it.
Just to clarify one thing I said about the sweeps. When I was talking about the 5-year sweep, that's a complete sweep that would look for all types of violations. We do have summer interns that do focus on grass, so they're kind of on two different processes.
Well, because that was going to be my question, just kind of talk a little bit more about the code enforcement sort of process for the year or schedule for the year. Because I think if we understood it better, we can help get the message out as well. And I think getting that message out to how the city operates might help a lot of these things as well. Like our my homeowner association requires them in the garage, so I'm not going to have the opportunities to get outside no matter what, so it won't make a difference to me. But I know that in my old place we had you know, coverage, so you couldn't see it from the street, and it was on a piece of cement. But that's only because the people that were there before me built that. You know, I'm guessing that if we would have had a builder, it would have just been on the cement or next to the house or whatever anyway. So, but I think we still, one of the big things we need to do is that community engagement piece. That, this is my opinion, is educate people on what the changes might be, because it sounds like that's what we're going to be doing, is asking people if you want this change, and then us voting that yes, I think we all agree maybe that needs to happen. But then just getting the word out about the changes that are happening so that you don't get as many calls. Yeah. But I do want to have some, I don't remember what the wording was in that email and that you said, but kind of that balance, right, of being able to have a standard of some kind that we don't give up on all standards just because someone complains, too. I guess that's kind of why I asked kind of what the schedule is like for the year. Like, you're doing sweeps, but are you doing sweeps of certain neighborhoods and you have it all, like, kind of mapped out? Or, you know, obviously we don't get that information out, because then they'll only be fixing their stuff up when you guys are coming. But
we do have a sweep strategy, like Kim had mentioned, a five-year strategy. We paused that recently because of, you know, being down with some inspectors. So the proactive work, which really drives a lot of that long-term compliance and that engagement. But, yeah, it's each January we revisit as a team and discuss some community indicators and, okay, here's the six neighborhoods. And that includes businesses as well. So there's an all-encompassing strategy citywide. And you'll hear that, oh, you were in my neighborhood last year, but there's still violations. Well, a lot of that is trash cans, right? They make their way back out. And we could go through a neighborhood and hide them all, and then in a month, I almost guarantee they'll a handful will come back out.
Well, the next day.
The next day.
No, I wanted to just say that, of making sure that we understand kind of what your process is so that we can help when people are calling and complaining, or when they're calling and complaining to us and they're not wanting to call you guys. I like the online sort of let you know that stuff's happening. That was really helpful, but I think we have to get that community engagement. We have to get the education out there. Well, no matter what we do, you know, if we want to change this, again, this isn't necessarily going to change my world, but it would make a lot of sense for us to be a little bit more, like, liberal about it. So, go ahead, thanks.
Yes, I just said, two quick points. One is, how many full-time enforcers do you have currently?
So we have eight on our staff. But four are dedicated to neighborhood enforcement and the neighborhood. So we have the three districts that we have one dedicated to. We align an intern each year with each of those, so there's essentially two people with those interns, which we have one third of this year. And then that fourth is that person that is part of the CDBG strategy, and then also the business side. So that person sweeps those businesses within identified neighborhoods each year as well.
Why are you down an intern? Is it you can't find them, or just no resources to hire them?
We offered many, many jobs. They took positions elsewhere, or it's a competitive environment now. I don't know. It's odd. You know, usually we don't have this type of issue. But yeah, we made offers, and they had other positions. Maybe
Target is paying $25 an hour.
Target, yeah. I mean, we're at 16 and looking to go to 18 next year, just to be competitive with the Bloomingtons and Hennepin County and some of those organizations. So yeah, it's just competitive.
I would also note that it can be an unpopular position going out there and typically engaging homeowners.
Absolutely.
In a context where you're essentially trying to provide education, but in some cases you're the enforcement wing of code enforcement.
Yeah.
And that can be a very uncomfortable thing for somebody who's an intern.
And we're looking for, you know, younger employees that are typically coming out of college with some soft skills on customer service and being able to, you know, have difficult conversations, conflict resolution, you know, building that within them as well, but it takes finding the right person.
Now, and those are the same interns, I'm sorry, interns. Those are the same folks who do the enforcement, the health enforcement as well, too. Are they a different set of
It depends on their schooling or their interests.
Okay.
We try to expose them to everything.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yep. So we have 4 neighborhood inspectors, 2 public health, that's
oh,
the
okay.
restaurants,
yeah,
and
yeah. 2 public health, sorry.
Okay.
And like food. Yeah.
Yep. Food, pools, and lodging. There's 2.
They're different training.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yep. And then there's a manager, and she really just focuses on problem cases and then overseeing the team.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, I think there should definitely be some sort of outreach, engagement, communication piece, because there are a number of folks who are going to be confused about and have no knowledge about this no more May thing. So, I mean, education definitely be key. Try to engage these folks and let them know. That's it for me, sir.
I can't tell if the glare is. Mayor Jacobson have her hand raised.
The phone, I think she has to press star 6 or something. I think she has to press something to unmute herself.
Oh,
if we've muted her.
She just texted that she's muted.
Oh, I muted her because she wasn't muted, yeah. She can't
I think she has to do it with, like, I think it's star 6? Six star something.
If it doesn't work, she could just go out and come back in, too.
Yeah, while we're waiting for her, I'll just. My part, as far as the trash cans go, option 3 for me, but I would like to have some kind of wording where it's on the side or the back of the house, not in front. I agree with Councilmember Morrison on the no mow May that we just adopted. I mean, I've got neighbors that have no mow June or July.
No so more May, June.
No mow summer, what they got. I don't really have a whole, I have nothing on the food or the pools or lodging code. That sounds good to me, but the trash cans I know has been an issue. I've got most of the complainers on my side of town, but I'm not going to mention their names until I get out of the office. So I would, option 3 would just sign it.
Option
2
for me.
Mayor Jacobson, you got your hand raised?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Are you in Florida?
What are the options? Because that wasn't what we got, right?
You want to walk? She wasn't here for the... We'll walk. Jason will walk through to the option.
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right, so option 1 was just to keep the code as is, which allows... storage, but it must be screened or behind the house or in the garage. Option 2 is to bring back language related to vegetation or landscaping as a screening material. That was eliminated in 2010 as an amendment. Would offer additional screening options for some residents. And then option 3 is neatly beside the garage with no screening in the rear or in the garage, inside the garage. Behind the front plane of the house, similar to what we're seeing in other communities, Maple Grove, Edina, Burnsville, and Brooklyn Center.
Okay. I have a question. Have we done, I first found this around community engagement, but shall we do a lot of these surveys on our website and things that people take? I mean, are we just deciding this today without engaging the community in a question?
No, there is an engagement strategy. There would be stakeholder engagement for the waste containers in July. There would be information and feedback campaigns for both no mow May and waste containers throughout July and August. And then you know, gaining additional research or feedback from cities participating in Noble May. So there's an intentional menu of options or strategies through the communication and community engagement team listed here on this slide.
Are we able to send this out to her?
Yep.
Email?
Sure.
Presentation.
Is that educating the people on what we've decided, or is it allowing them to be part of the answer?
A lot of the
I feel like we survey about a lot of things, and I feel like people should have a say in this and how they want their neighborhood to look.
Yeah, so early meetings with communications and community engagement, there was a some discussion about videos. We currently have a video on the website that covers a lot of different codes. But the idea was to get this information out there in that format through multiple channels so that people know what we're talking about, because some people might not even know what is the waste container storage code, right? And how does that impact your work? So telling that story through video and other materials, and then engaging stakeholders in some form of format yet to be determined. But yeah, they would inform that. So what I'm hearing from community engagement is similar to the on-street parking strategy, where you had stakeholders discuss this, provide feedback options, and then from that point, really draft what the community wants.
I think if I could add to that, I think the we're hearing that there's some general support for option three. So what we would do is say, hey, the council is considering changing the code to be this thing, you know, allowing the garbage to be on the side of it, and they're seeking your feedback about this considered change. So there would be this round of feedback that you would get to inform your actual decision making. And then if you can go to the next. And then, you know, it's a three-step process because we have a first and second reading. So this is like the first step. Hey, we're talking about this. Do you guys want to talk about it with the community? It sounds like the answer is yes. So we'll go start doing that. And then there'll be the first reading and the public hearing and then the second reading. So after the awareness campaign. So the notion would be definitely to make sure that the community is aware that you're considering the change. It sounds like you guys know what change you're considering. So we'll be transparent about that.
Is she kind of saying that she wants you to do a survey?
I mean, I would recommend that we know surveys aren't our perfect tool, so we're going to have to, you know, make sure we're reaching all the different stakeholder groups that might have an opinion on the matter, and then, you know, you guys are going to have to filter that information to inform your decision. We do have the community survey that has some questions related to garbage. They're not the perfect question that answers this question of, do you want the deal to allow garbage on the side yard? I mean, that's too, it's such a narrow question.
But we've done surveys for like the water tower and other things that I can't believe we can't come up with something that gets it out there and has people to be able to say yes or no.
Well, we know when we've done surveys, we primarily get responses from white residents.
Exactly.
So, I mean, we can do it. I just know there's always been a lot of critical feedback to our surveys. So, I mean, my suggestion with this situation is that you guys are educated on this topic. We'll make sure people are aware, and then you'll get that round of feedback, and then we'll definitely make a decision.
Okay. Do you,
Mayor Jacobson, do you have any more that you want to add? I'm going to make sure she's done.
No. No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Morrison.
Can you just refresh my memory? Tell me why Noble, Maine was implemented. What's the reason again? You mentioned something about pollen, and you mentioned something about something else.
Yeah, it's an initiative, a conservation initiative to help sort of provide a better habitat for pollinators.
For bees.
Yep.
To get off to a good start, healthy starts early in the season.
So we cannot omit that value to the reason why Noble may exist. That's imperative that they know that component right there and the benefits of it thereof. So again, just like we all know Christmas is coming in December, some of us plan for that, and people know what that means. We can begin to put that information in park pages up until that particular point to engage as well as to educate the reason for Normal May 2023, to promote it like that or those type of things. And hear any feedback and or to keep putting that in their minds about Noble May and also about the trash cans, consideration or possibility of the changes. So I think via our website, which I don't know a lot of people visit, park pages, we put forth efforts to try to engage the community and educate them as well on the benefits of it and the reason for doing it. So, but I think it's real value for us to say the pollen piece in the reason for no more maize.
I tried to make it through May. I couldn't get it. Yeah, I had the mold. So.
Anything else?
Can I just mention one thing I heard? So I heard kind of two different approaches to no more maize. One was sort of a registration approach, and one was to not register. I don't know if there's consensus among the council about those two philosophies.
I'm no registrant here, just adopted as a city.
Well, I'm only saying some kind of registration because once we get like complaints, then we can at least say, oh, okay, they are registered as part of participating. They should have their lawn mowed by June 10th.
Or we can just tell people that they don't have to mow.
Or you can just tell them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's as long as we can get the message out to the whole city so that you aren't like calling these guys every 10 seconds, my neighbor's still in mow, my neighbor's still in mow, my neighbor's still in mow, that it's clear that that's, I don't care which way, whichever way potentially is better for the resident is what I would want. So I know my husband won't make it through me either. So
I think she just said no registration. Yeah.
No registration. Okay. So I think the consensus is no registration. That's what I would see as well. I do have a quick question on all of those, I guess. So what do we do on, like, housing associations? They can do their own trash can stuff, right? So they're not involved in that.
Correct.
And then as far as mowing and all that stuff, rental properties, does the owner, does the renter get the warning or does the owner get the warning?
They both do.
They both do.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So we had talked a little bit about the five-year cycle. Is that standard for most cities? Our size?
I can't say that for certain. It's standard for us in that we want to be a little bit more intentional in getting out and more equitable in just not just focusing in certain areas. So it was also a way to say, hey, we'll be there next year versus can you come sweep my neighborhood for trash cans and other things. You know, it's one of those strategies too, is to really, but also separate those six neighborhoods so that there is that equity lens play to that too, because you know, we're just not going to sweep parts of the city. It's, you know, three neighbors here, three neighborhoods over here, but it's spaced out against across all the council districts. But yeah.
So is there also like a play between the smaller districts versus the time scale? Because, you know, if someone is saying, because, you know, some of the people we're hearing from are saying, we should sweep more often, right? So then does that butt up against the geography of it in terms of, we don't want to sweep this place, like, so often, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, like, one example, the Edinburgh neighborhood is this year. Its sheer size is so big that, you know, we might only do five neighborhoods this year because it encompasses multiple district council districts, but also just the sheer number of houses, which has an active HOA, and they do their own enforcement. So it's doable, right? So we can get through that area and then focus on maybe Monroe in the following year, or Harkoff is one. Trinity Gardens, if I'm naming the right neighborhoods. All of these are sort of on the list,
right?
And that's the goal. But with all these different things that can happen.
So what are your thoughts? And I don't know if any of the other council members are, but I would entertain, what would it take, like, budget-wise to try to decrease that?
Decrease the time. Can I, you know, you asked about information on this stuff. We, in the past, we've given you memos that kind of tell you what our sweep strategy is for the year. So we can do that again. It sounds like you guys, we haven't done it recently, so we'll make sure to get that to you. That's the information about what neighborhoods are being sweeped. The other thing to think about is that we always prioritize complaints. That's been the direction of the council. So as complaints go up, this time of year, lots of complaints. So that's what we're doing. Especially with being down two staff right now in this one little moment in time. But then in quieter complaint seasons, then we're doing more proactive. So just thinking about it's not like a standard thing. But if it takes us 5 years right now, which I don't know that we can even say that we're going to make it in 5 years with four staff, it's pretty easy math to imagine what it would take to get us. If you want to decrease it to 2 years, we can do the math. So it kind of depends on like what your goal you're trying to achieve. We can tell you what we think it would take to get there.
Depends on the neighborhood too, because 85th, like the south side of 85th was part of the business suite, which we're not going to get in and out of in a year, right? There's just so many different properties in there that have different needs and issues. So,
You mean the business is along 85th?
The business is along 85th, south of 85th from, you know, I think it was the Birch Grove neighborhood, if I'm not mistaken. But that's keeping that inspector there this year. And then she's going to, because Edinburgh is on the north side, now it's the north side businesses. So residential businesses may keep us in an area longer than we want, but it's important that we're having those meetings and engaging all the residents and the business owners and getting in there thoroughly, and so that we're thoroughly so we can come back or don't have to come back in the next year. But
I'm asking because I would be interested in seeing maybe what it would look like to bring it down to like 4 and maybe 3. 3 years.
We can look into that. Yeah. There's a lot of nuances, but
just something a little bit more. I think I've said that before. When we were talking about budget stuff last year, I just, you know, as big as this city is, we sort of have to, I mean, I think I took 3 or 4 pictures when I just drove to the thing about mowing and you know, that new place that's going to be the old Baker Square. The grass is like this tall. I'm like, what are they doing? How can they not see it? So I would just like it to be something where it's, well, if you guys have more staff to be able to do more stuff. And whether that's 3 years, 4 years, I'm completely in agreement with you that we have to at least look at it budget-wise and make that decision at that point. But if we don't know, we don't know, right? So I agree with that. Thank you.
In my opinion, those factors that you're speaking about is based on the size of these particular areas that they inspected. The size of the area, if one area takes you a year to get to it, you got 4 people multiplied times a year, I mean the size of those particular areas. If we got 10 areas that requires 10 people, then we down 6 because we only got 4 inspectors. Those areas requires a year worth of sweeps to get through those areas. Now take that time to people that we have that's inspectors who we don't have enough of. So to minimize 5 years is impossible at this, I'm not going to use the word impossible, but it's not reasonable at this particular time because we, number one, don't have the staff. Number two, the size of each particular area is different to give us the right equation that we need to come up with the solution to make that happen, to decrease the years from 5 years to a less amount of years. The next thing that I just wanted to add was just the language, and this no more may does exclude apartments. What we need to say about that, that's what I wanted to bring up. I don't want apartment units with their grass that tall. I think that should be language in there that they still have to maintain their property.
Well,
is that normal? Maybe that be for businesses as well.
I mean,
I think it's limited to single and 2-family residences.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to make sure we didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe the question, my question, be, and I think it's what you're getting at, which is, perfect world, how many staff would you have? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
in the perfect world to do a good job and keep up on stuff and try to do the sweeps that need to be done, what does the staffing look like for that model?
Well, I think I'd go back to you and say
what's the
service level you're looking for? Because we can
better than it is now.
I mean, it's 5 years right now. It's responding to complaints in a timely manner, which I think our staff does a decent job of doing. It takes, you know, and then the second part is it takes us 5 years to get through the community on proactive. So if you want to see it at 2 years, then, you know, we can do the math on that.
I think the hard part for me is that it's a little too heavy on the complaint side. So then we do end up with that sort of, if all of us aren't complaining, then there ends up this inequity piece where you get the 2 or 3 that are complaining all the time. So it makes me feel like, okay, should I be gone there? Like, turning it, I mean, I know we could send emails and stuff, but I'm like, I don't like the complaint-based model because it feels unfair to me and it feels wrong and a whole bunch. That's kind of where I'm getting at is, where do we find that balance between being proactive and always being responding to complaints? Because, you know, somebody understands that about our system and then they sit and make complaints again and again.
Within the memo that we'll provide some case data and violation data as well. You'll see trash cans, the amount of time that's dedicated to that That will definitely.
Just in the Monroe neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right that right now the model we're using is prioritizing complainants and being extremely responsive to complainants. And that's been the direction of the council. So that's what we do. So you guys have the power to change that if you want to change that.
I just don't want to give certainly one or two people that much power, I guess, is my problem.
Well, they all live in my neighborhood, so we're good. You got everything you need from
customer apartments. Okay. Oh, just one quick thing. In terms of this, the number of workers, I think one thing that will be interesting to see, we might be able to do a little bit of analysis on, is that if we don't have to do inspections on lawn grass in May, and we don't have to do inspections in the future on the waste storage, how much capacity does that open up?
We're not going to answer that. Not very much. A little bit.
It will.
That's a good thought.
Sorry, one more thing. Yes. So back to the renter and multi-unit housing that Council Member Morrison brought up. I mean, if we're really committed to the values and the mission, the purpose of No Mow May, which is to allow for pollinator environments, you know, to be natural and organic for that month, then why are we limiting grass at all at businesses and residential places then?
I just threw that out there. Just
well, I think we have some that just don't take care of their stuff in the first place, so I don't think it helps.
Yeah, but
I mean, if we go,
but
do
that's,
it,
that's,
we
a,
do it,
that's
but
a different one.
I just wanted to make sure that there was a distinction between apartment buildings that manages these or don't manage their lawn or those type of things. Were they included and or excluded? I just wanted to throw that out there so we didn't miss that point. You know, if we're going to do No More May, and we all agree that apartment buildings are part of that language, I don't have a problem with it, but I just didn't want us to overlook that. That's all I was getting at.
I'm assuming that some of the management, if we talk to some of the property owners and management, property owners, companies, they might be willing to set aside some areas to let grow, but they would probably say, oh, but these areas definitely we will have to maintain, is what I'm assuming. So maybe we need to do some direct engagement with some of the businesses and residential properties to kind of get their feedback on their buy-in as well. Because I would love to be committed to the full purpose of No Mowing.
You should be committed. Anything else?
I was just highlighting the Edina registration form. So it does limit to residential properties that are owner-occupied or renters that receive landlord permission. So all other properties must comply. But we certainly could engage the business community as well.
Just one last thing. I'm sorry.
Oh, there's so many one last things.
I just wanted to make sure that wasn't... I'm just talking about apartment buildings, not people who rent a property. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's go to council member reports and announcements.
I just would like to say that over the past weekend that I was at the Sheriff's Community Engagement Day, which was a real success. Park Fire Department was there. And I had a robust conversation with the Sheriff's Department about law enforcement and community engagement. It's something where once a year is just not going to cut it. We have to continue to demonstrate the interaction between law enforcement and the community to build a better trust and better working relationship with the community. They had Sheriff Divers that was there, all of the helicopters, a lot of the resources that the Sheriff Department used, where kids was participating and all these type of things, able to talk to the Sheriff Department and SWAT did some things there on site. It was a great hit, a success, from the boats to all of the bomb equipment and stuff that they had going on there this past weekend. And again, it was more in support of working together to continue to put that law enforcement and community engagement piece out in the community, proactively showing law enforcement proactively involved in the community, other than seeing what you see on TV and
those type of things where people developing bad taste about law enforcement and those type of things. So it was a big piece that that went on this past weekend, which was pretty exciting. So.
Thanks for doing that. Councilman Russell, you have something?
No, I just wanted to say after a 2-year hiatus, Tito Days is back in full force. And you know, it's my first time attending Tito Days as I've been in the city.
Shame on you.
I know, right? It was great. It was nice. I think staff did an excellent job. There were a lot of folks who were there from other cities who came in to check out the parades. And it was a good time. So I just want to say thanks to staff and residents for showing up. And I'm sure it's going to be bigger and better, you know, next year. And it was nice. The weather was cooperating. You know, I thought it was going to rain, but it didn't. It was pretty sunny and nice. So the park and rec team did an awesome job, and all staff, I'm sure, was part of it.
Anybody else?
Okay.
City manager report.
I'm just going to mention Tater Days if nobody did, but Councilman Russell did. So just one quick thing. We typically do a sort of a spring thank you gathering for staff, typically an employee breakfast. Last year we modified that to add in have an employee breakfast, but then for staff who don't work certain schedules, typically fire and police, we created two grill out events. So we will get that, if any of the council members want to attend, we will get that information to you all. But there, the morning of June 22nd from 7 to 9, evening grill out event at the police station from 6 to 7:30, and then a second one in July 21st, 6 to 7:30. So we had to police and firework various schedules, so we had to try to schedule in ways that we connected with those other staff. So
was that the stuff that was done last year at the fire station? Girl and I went there.
At the police station.
Oh, it's police station, yeah. Fire station. Yeah. Okay, yeah, okay, good deal.
Okay, anything else?
One last. Yeah, you're the one to say anything else. I just remember. I want to thank the police departments for looking into the whole catalytic converter labeling thing. And so we were able to get an event here in Brooklyn Park on Saturday. 127 cars were labeled. So, you know, it's a great pilot program to help deter that, we're probably going to be planning another because we still have like 70 or so. So we had 200 labels initially, so we're going to plan another event to kind of get the rest of those out.
Yep, and then we did order more of those stickers.
Oh, cool. So
we have a long-term plan, and then also we partnered up with TSI.
Right.
If you're not aware, it's Don off of Jolly. And that's a repair shop, and they are, for a very nominal fee, actually, you can go in there, they will etch your VIN number of your vehicle into your catalytic converter, so we'll be able to find it. I love that the best, because any officer who gets that in a car finds that can run that VIN and know that it came back to your vehicle. Therefore, we know it's stolen, therefore we can make an arrest and hold people accountable.
So typically, the catalytic converters don't have any identifier on them?
There is nothing on them, yeah. And the problem is when we do find somebody that has them, a couple months ago, with a routine traffic stop, or it was actually a slumper on 252 when they woke him up. He took off running, they chased him. He had catalytic converters, but we have no idea. Like, he never got charged with that because nobody knows where they came from. And you can't, you know, there's no way to prove that they're stolen if you can't prove where they came from that they're actually stolen. So.
And my wife lost two on her Prius in broad daylight.
Oh, yeah.
One at River Park and one at Palmer Lake. So, and
yes.
It looks exactly like your car.
So pulling it in front.
Is that a specific car? Right? Right?
Yeah, so the
they're so fast to take this stuff.
So we're losing about 1.75 a day in Brooklyn Park. And we have the 14 top cars. I mean, almost guaranteed it'll be one of those 14, Prius being like number one or
winner.
Two.
Winner! You better check the really. Picture.
Go down to the side and have it etched. And then there's also, if you watch the CCX story, there was also another interesting gentleman who's actually welding a bar across it, making it very difficult for them to even steal. So there's some interesting things out there.
Yeah. I just want to say thank you on the record to Chief over the weekend. They recovered our dog. Somebody stole a dog, and they found them dead, all three of them. Later on, thank you for what you guys did, and we just broke it, and one of the dogs was pregnant, and you've seen our dogs, these dogs are worth over $100,000, and then it was pregnant, and these dog puppies sold for $15,000 a piece, so somebody stole them over the weekend, last weekend, we found them. They don't have to, all three of them are dead, so I just want to say thank you, Chad.
Sorry, not with the outcome we wanted, but
yeah, he called me. He didn't want to call me. He said, "I don't want to make this call." I'm going to tell you, they found all three of them. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to let Mayor Jacobson know that I got this adjourned in 1 hour 10 minutes.
You want to ask her if there's
if Lee wasn't here, it would have been 30 minutes.
Sure.